We started yesterday to discuss the following scenario. The king has a brother who's married, and he dies without children. That's one scenario. And there the question is, what's the story with the melech and his sister-in-law who falls for yibum? Is he miyabim her? Does he give a chalitza? That's one scenario. Now we have another scenario. And that is, let's say the king himself dies and he leaves a wife without any children, with a surviving brother. Does she fall for yibum to his brother, his living brother? There we have another problem, and that is that no one's allowed to marry the widow of the king. So if the king dies, even though she falls for yibum, his brother, his surviving brother, could not be miyabim her because he's not allowed to be married to the king's wife. So those are the various scenarios. So let's first talk about the scenario in which the king's brother dies childless and his wife falls for yibum to the king. So the halacha is that there's no chalitza in this case. We'll get to yibum in just a second. But first let's focus on chalitza. Chalitza would require her to spit in front of the king in this case. And that's an impossibility. Now, is there a possibility that the king could be miyabim her? So the Rambam is going to be mechadesh, that's impossible. So if you have Resh Nun Zayin on the top left, you'll see the Lashon of the Rambam. The Rambam writes, let me just fill you in on the case. The scenario is that the king has a brother who died childless, and now his sister-in-law falls to him for yibum. And the Mishnah establishes at the beginning of Sanhedrin, lo cholitz. The Rambam wants to address a different issue. Can he be miyabim his sister-in-law? Can the king fulfill the mitzvah of yibum? So the Rambam writes in Perek Beis Mehilchas Melachim, which you'll see on the top left of your page, V'eino choletz shenemar v'yarka b'fanav v'zeb b'zayon. For her to spit in his presence, you know, towards him, as if to say, well, you're not being mekayim the mitzvah of yibum, that's an insult to the king. Then the Rambam adds the next five words. V'hoil v'eino choletz eino miyabim. And what we get from this Rambam is what I call two sides of a coin. That chalitza and yibum are two parts, two peas in a pod. Meaning, it's either all or nothing. If we knock off one of them, then we ipso facto knock off the other one. If the melech has no possibility of chalitza, then there's no possibility of yibum. And that we saw also in the name of the Bar Tanura. Now, we have an interesting parallel in a case in Masechta Yevamos on Daf Mem Dalet, where a man was married to two women and he died childless. So his two wives now fall for Yibum and Chalitza. And the Gemara, the Sugya there in Yevamos, establishes a principle which is called Eino Boneh Shtei Batim. And therefore, as far as one of his two wives, she will get either chalitza or yibum, and that the yavam has that choice, but the other wife is out of the picture. Meaning, that's called a tzara, right? When a man has two wives, the second wife is considered a tzara. That's just a name. And that tzara, the second wife, doesn't require neither chalitza nor yibum. So again, we are, in a sense, repeating the Rambam's principle that chalitza and yibum are haba hatalia, they're interdependent. Frektrab kiveger, what about the case of chereshes? So we're talking about a deaf mute, and she doesn't have the capacity to recite the parsha of yibum of chalitza. I'm sorry. So what's the halacha? There's no possibility of chalitza. What about yibum? Can a person be miyabim his sister-in-law who's mute? What would you say according to everything that we've presented until now? Right, she doesn't have chalitza, so therefore ipso facto she doesn't have yibum, because it's a package deal. It's all or nothing. That's what we saw in the Rambam, and that's what we saw in the Vartanura. And that's basically the underlying premise of the Gemara in Yevamos with regard to Eino Bonus Shtei Batin. Right, that the other wife doesn't need neither chalitza nor yibum because it's one package deal. And that's basically our case of a melech whose brother passed away, that he could not give chalitza because of Yarkal Afan of his Evizayin, and therefore there's no yibum as well. But yet, to our surprise, Tosus says in the Sechti Yevamos that a chareshes, in that case, since she's Eina Ola L'chalitza, she cannot have chalitza because she's a chareshes and she's not capable of reciting the parasha, meaning the recitation of the parasha of Yibum is critical. But nevertheless, Ola L'Yibum, you want to underline those two words. So here's where Rabbi Kivega has a problem. Why? Because we intuit, based on all that we've seen and all the sources, that if there's no chalitza, there's no yibum. Here's a case where there's no chalitza, but yet there is yibum. So Rabbi Kivega quotes a Tosfos in Masechta Yevamos on that same sugya mem dalet, and Tosfos says that we make a mistake. If we assume that a chareshes is excluded from chalitza because she cannot speak, that's a mistake on our part. But rather, she's called a bas chalitza. She's included in chalitza. But that, again, in a theoretical sense. Do you follow what I mean? She needs chalitza, but there's no possibility of chalitza. And that's called, in the language of Tosfos, Ela defumayhu, meaning her mouth, which is incapable of speaking, hu dekoyevle. You know, she has a problem, a medical problem with her power of speech. Frekt Rebbe Kiveger, why not apply the same identical logic to the case of a melech? And assume that a melech is also a bar chalitza, he's included on the chalitza. Why can't there be chalitza in the case of a melech when his brother dies? The answer is Eina Rashai Leganos Atzmo. There's a blockage of gnus to a melech that makes it impossible for him to do chalitza, but he is included in chalitza. There's only something that prevents him from doing chalitza. And we would apply the principle of Pumayu Ka'ovle that we applied to the case of chareshes. So just to summarize the question of Rabbi Kivega, why does the Rambam say in the case of a melech that just because he's not choletz, ho'il v'yeno choletz eino miyavim, when we have the precedent of a chareshes, and you don't apply the principle of hol v'yeno choletz, therefore eino misyavim, is fakir, she does fall for yibum, and Tosis's logic is because she's included in yibum, just that her inability to speak is a problem in her body that makes it impossible to implement the chalitza, but she is a bas chalitza, she's included on the chalitza. Hence, Tosfos establishes she's included on the yibum, which means that a man could be miyabim his sister-in-law, fulfill the mitzvah of yibum, even though she's a chareshes, even though she's excluded from chalitza. Why? Because she's really included in chalitza. And that's called a bas chalitza. And l'chora, the same thing should apply in a case of the melech's sister-in-law. There is chalitza over here. The melech can't allow for chalitza. The halacha will not allow chalitza to take place But that's because of a blockage. And what is that blockage? It's the fact that it's a gnus to the melech. So it's a gnus to the melech to suffer chalitza that prevents chalitza. Just like in the case of Chareshes, there's a problem that inhibits chalitza. What is that problem? The problem is that she can't speak. So I just want to take a pause here because I never know whether I was clear and we understand the Kasha of Rebbe Kiveg or we don't. Is there anyone here who's willing to it won't be a gnus, I promise you. Is anyone here who's willing to repeat Rebbe Kiveg's Kasha, the equation between Chareshes and Melech?
Well, the Chareshes has an inability to speak, so she can't do the chalitza, but she still can do the ibum.
And why is that? Because even though she has an ability to do chalitza, that's only a blockage. Why is that called a blockage? Because although she is included in chalitza, what's blocking her?
His inability to speak.
The inability to speak. Right. That's a disability in terms of implementing chalitza. Now Rebbe Kiveg wants to go back to the case of Amalek.
The Melech also should really be doing chalitza, but because of his honor, we won't allow her to spin in front of him. So he's really blocked from doing chalitza, but he should still
be included in Yibum. Why does the Rambam say that since the Melech can't have chalitza, he can't have Yibum? We already saw from Chereshes, from the mute, a precedent that you could have someone who's not capable of doing chalitza, but yes, they're included in Yibum. And the reason for that, says Tosis, is because Pumayahu Dekoivle, which means her mouth doesn't make her, doesn't give her the ability to implement the chalitza, but she is included in chalitza. And then Afkamina is going to be that since she's not excluded from chalitza except for the technicality and the blockage, therefore she's included in the mitzvah of Yibum. Why not apply the same logic to
King?
Because there's no reason why Yibum shouldn't take place. In the case of chalitza, we can't allow chalitza to take place because of the blockage of gnus, it's a gnai. Then why shouldn't there be a Yibum in the case of a Mela? That's where
he can choose. He can choose. The girl, the woman can't. The woman just doesn't have the choice isn't given to her.
Again, but the Rambam is saying that there's no Yibum in the case of a Mela, which means it's completely excluded. Eino miyavin. He's not miyavin. And the question is why? I mean, why not say that although he, you know, chalitza is an impossibility, but Yibum should still be a very live, active possibility. Now, there's another case where we apply the principle of excluding someone from chalitza. And that you'll see in the third paragraph on your left column. That's the case called Chayvei Lavin. What that means is that in the case of Chayvei Lavin, in addition to the fact that the Yavam and the Yavam are related as brother-in-law and sister-in-law, there's another Iser that's involved. An additional Iser. Like let's say, for example, she was a Grusha. She had been divorced in a previous marriage, in her first marriage. So she cannot marry a Kohen. Correct? Mm-hmm. So there are various situations and scenarios in which you have Chayvei Lavin, which prevent Yibum. He's not allowed to marry his Yavama, his sister-in-law, because of an additional Isur called Chayvei Lavin. Their halacha is that if there's no Yibum, then there's no Chalitza. Meaning, what we're going to say in that case is that it's a package deal, and it's interdependent. Both Yibum and Chalitza, two sides of the same coin. And if there's no Yibum, there's no Chalitza. Why is that so? I mean, why not apply the same logic that we saw before? that the Torah is saying that he cannot implement Yibum because of the Isur Lav. But as far as Chalitza is concerned, what's preventing him from giving a Chalitza?
You're talking about, not the king, but another...
A different scenario, which is called Chai Ve'Lavim. So again, the plot grows thicker because we're not going to say, well, just because you excluded from one of these two, therefore you excluded from the other one. Correct? That's right. what we said it was a package deal.
Right.
And we proved that that's not so, neither in the case of a Chayreshes who's excluded from Chalitza but she's included under Yibum, nor in the case of, logically, at least according to Rabbi Kivega's logic, in the case of a Melech, although he's excluded from Chalitza, he should be included under Yibum. So what happens is that we don't understand the rules of the game over here, because you know, Melech should be similar to Chayreshes, and yet there's a fundamental difference in Halacha. Chayreshes is going to be included under Yibum, and in the case of Melech, there's no Yibum. And the Rambam writes, "Hol v'yeno choleitz, eino v'yamin." When do we say it's a package deal, and when do we not? So, for example, in the case of Chai v'lavim, the principle is that eino ole liyibum v'yeno ole chalitza. That's a package deal, and it's interdependence. There's no possibility of yibum because of the Chai v'lavim situation. Therefore, there's no possibility of chalitza. So we do apply the principle of a package deal. So I was thinking that maybe the case of Chai V'Lavim is a little bit different, because the Torah has to determine whether or not she falls for Yibum. In other words, when it comes to Chai V'Lavim, because of the nature of this relationship between the Yavam and the Yavama, we have to address the fundamental question: is this scenario included in the mitzvah of Yibum? Does the Torah really want Yibum to take place? And we might suggest that since there's an Iser of a Lav in this relationship, the Torah doesn't want Yibum to take place. So the Torah, in a sense, is rejecting Yibum. And in this scenario, there is no Yibum. If there's no Yibum, then there's no Zika, and therefore you don't need Chalitza. That could be true. But in the case of a marriage to a Chayreshes, the Torah never indicated that there's no desire on the Torah's part for Yibum. And Rabbi Kivega's logic in the case of Melech, the Torah never decided that it's a bad idea for the Melech to be Miyabima. And therefore, logically, we should separate between the two. And we should say that this is not a hafka of Yibum. This is not coming to exclude Yibum. But in the case of Chai V'Lavim, it could very well be that the Torah is saying that there is no mitzvah of Yibum in this case.
Excuse me, Rabbi, my ignorance, but Chai V'Lavim means what?
A violation of a law.
Okay.
What would be the example of
Chai V'Lavim
in this situation?
Let's say, for example, Mamzeres is Chai V'Lavim. Let's say, for example,
one sister
would be, two sisters is Chai V'Krisus. That's not Lavim. What else would come under Chai V'Lavim? Well, Mitzri and Adomi is what's called the Lav HaBo Mechal Essay. So I don't know if that's exactly the same, but it's pretty much the same. So there are many cases where the marriage was legal, but now, because of the relationship through Yibum, we have Chai V'Lavim. Okay. Now, what I would like to point out to you is the following. That in the paragraph Vehine, that's the third paragraph, if you drop down around 10 lines, you'll see a line that starts with the word shtei batim. Maybe it's less than 10 lines down from the top of the paragraph. Maybe it's about 7-8 lines. So at the end of that line, he writes, v'tirates de'hacha kevan de'pacha rachmanu mi'yibum hachinami pacha mi'chalitza aval shar chai v'lavim lo pacha rachmanu mi'yibum ela iser lav gorem lahem. There shouldn't be any chalitza. So he says the following. it doesn't really work in both directions, correct? If you say that the Torah excluded Yibum, then we're going to say there's no need for Chalitza. But in Chayvei Lavim, the Torah didn't exclude Yibum. The Torah just said that he can't implement the Yibum because he's blocked as a result of the Isur Lav. So when do we apply the principle that there's no Chalitza? That's only in a case where the Torah really exempted him from the mitzvah of Yibum. Like, for example, you remember the case where he was married to two wives, and the Yavam is only enjoined to marry one of the two wives. So the Torah patters him from Yibum on the second wife. Therefore, she doesn't need Chalitza. In the case of Chayvei Lavim, the Torah didn't create a ptur from Yibum. The Torah is just saying that you are blocked, you are prevented from Yibum because of the Isulah. And in fact, the Gemara is going to tell us V'dinu shelo yachlots eliyavimto riba, that in the case of Chayvei Lavim, there might be a special ribui to include and obligate Yibum. I'm sorry, Chalitza I meant to say. So I stand correct. Now, if you take a look at the last 10 lines on this page, you'll see that he writes, there's a sentence that line that begins with Lechora, he writes, the Afal Gav Darshina Gam Ke Misha Eino Ola Lechalitza Eino Ola Leyibum Hainu Dafka Hecha De Potter Min HaChalitza. And fast forwarding, Aval Cheresh V'Chareshes De Lek of Tur Mi Chalitza El Shedavar Acher Garam Sheinu Yochel Lachlotz. So in the case of a mute woman, the Torah never said that there's no obligation to give a chalitza. The Torah only said it's impossible. She's prevented from doing chalitza. That's called dover achir garam. In such a case, there's no reason to exclude her from yibum. So it's only when there's a din of a ptur, not just a separate ma'akiv, you know, something that prevents or blocks, when the Torah says there's a ptur, then we go both ways. And we set up the ptur both for Chalitza and for Yibum, going in both directions. And this leads us back to the question of Rabbi Kibeger in the case of Amelech. Because in the case of Amelech, the Torah doesn't say he's potter from Chalitza. The Torah is saying that he can't do Chalitza because of the Gnai, because of the insult, the disgrace to Malchus, to his stature as Amelech. And therefore, his final conclusion on the top of the next page is Havile Lememar Sha'ola Liyibum, that the Melech should be included in the Parsha of Yibum. Why? Because it's only something that's preventing him, as we said before, from Chalitza. But that prevention is not a Ptur, but rather it's just in the implementation. He cannot implement Chalitza, but he should be Chayev, therefore in the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, I'd like to spend a little time with you on the concept of Almanoso Shel Kohen Gadol. What happens? The Kohen Gadol is married, he dies without children, and there's no possibility that his brother, his surviving brother, will be Miyavim her, because she, as the widow of the Kohen Gadol, is prohibited to marry anyone else except for another king that we discussed with. And here I'd like you to look on the bottom of page Resh Nun Ches. So that's a page you should have open in front of you. And if you see the last two lines, it says, V'yeinosin almanoso. And he quotes a Yushalmi that the widow or the divorcee, let's say she received a get from the melech divorced his wife, no one else is allowed to marry her. Now, in addition to the statement in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, we also have a Mechilta. And that you'll see on page Resh Nun Tes. The Pasuk says in Parshas Yisro, Sipora Eshes Moshe Achar Shilucheha. Now, what does that word shilucheha mean? We can literally translate it as Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, after she was sent out. But what does that mean, she was sent out? So Rabbi Yeshua says, according to the quote in the Mechilta, achar sheniftara mimenu beget. Now again, I'm not going into all the dimensions of the relationship between Moshe and his wife Tzipporah, but let's just accept for the time being, sort of as an axiom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu indicated that he can no longer have a relationship with his wife Tzipporah. We're going to have to see exactly at what time that happened. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, according to this Tana in the Mechilta, gave his wife a get. Now, once Moshe Rabbeinu divorces Tzipporah, then theoretically anyone could marry her. Am I right? Unless what? What would indicate, or what might force a person or induce a person to entertain the possibility that no one's allowed to marry Tzipporah? Correct, that Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of a melech.
Yeah, and a kohen.
Well, again, you can marry the divorcee of a kohen gadol, but you can't marry the divorcee of a melech, as we saw in the Yerushalmi. So if Moshe Rabbeinu in fact delivered a get to his wife Tzipporah, then one could wonder whether or not she, Tzipporah, could be allowed to marry anyone else. So is she considered Eshes HaMelech, or in this case Grushas HaMelech? If you take a look in the Balaturim in Parshas Yisro, he makes the following comment: Eshes Moshe Achar Shiluchel. How could the pasuk make any sense? It says in the Reisha that she is the wife of Moshe,
right?
And then in the Sefer it says Achar Shiluchel, after she was divorced. That's the way Rabbi Shu interprets it in the Mechilta. How could she be considered Eshes Moshe Li Achar Shiluchel? So Balaturim comes up with an amazing chiddush. He says, Eshes Moshe Achar Shiluchel, he can't ishto, even though he divorced her and she's technically not his wife, but it's as if he's still married her. Why? Afal Pisha Sholcha, even though he divorced her, he's still married her. Why? She's still, so to speak, you know, the apron strings are still connected to Moshe. Shemelech, if a person is a king and he divorces his wife, ain't no sim guru shaso. So according to Mishnah, he says that no one's allowed to marry the wife of the king, even after he the king, delivers a bill of divorce to his wife. So therefore, the Balatur makes a very sharp move in explaining the pasuk Eshes Moshe Liachar Shiluchel, means she's Keishto, even after he gave her a divorce, because no one's allowed to marry her. And the underlying premise of the Turim, the Baal Turim, is that Moshe Rabbeinu is a melech. Ad kana kofa aleph. So Moshe Rabbeinu is a melech, and even though he delivered a divorce to his wife Tzipporah, no one's allowed to marry her, she's still considered ke'eshes Moshe. And what ties her down to Moshe Rabbeinu? The fact that you cannot marry the woman who's divorced from the king.
Wait. This is like Tilly logic. He divorces her. She's divorced. And she cannot marry somebody else because she's still tied to the king. She's either divorced or she's not. Because she can't marry anybody else doesn't mean she's still tied to the king. The king gave her a get.
Right, but if that get is meant to be matir her, to allow her to marry someone else, it means a get is called a krisis. Krisis means right. It completely severs the relationship between the Baal and his wife, who's a grusha.
There's no krisis?
But in this case of a melech, it's a very strange kind of phenomenon. Why? Because we're saying that even after he divorces her, she's still considered the Eshes HaMelech. In
only
what sense?
Because she can't marry somebody else?
She can't marry someone else. So that is the Torah convey that message to us and enlighten us that Tzipporah, even after she received a bill of divorce, can no longer marry someone else. And the Baal Turim says that that's hinted in the Pasuk, Eshes Moshe. Why does the Pasuk say Eshes Moshe?
Eshes Moshe if she's already divorced.
Correct. If the Torah would have meant that she was Eshes Moshe in the past, going back into history, but she's no longer Eshes Moshe, then the pasuk is contradicting itself. Right. It says Eshes Moshe Achar Shiluchel. she's Eishes Moshe even after he divorced her. How do you make sense out of that? Says about Turim, what the Torah is trying to convey is that al pi halacha, she's considered like Eishes Moshe even after the divorce. In what sense, halachically, legally, is she considered like the wife of Moshe, that she can no longer marry someone? She continues to be prohibited to marry anyone else, even despite the divorce, based on the halach of Eishes Melech.
So is she entitled to all the rights of a married woman then?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that the divorce is valid. The only difference is that an Eishes Melech is not allowed to be married by anyone else. No one else is allowed to marry her.
So it's meaningless. I mean, if she can't marry somebody else, but she's still tied to him as a wife, but not a wife.
Right.
But it's not entitled to all the privileges that a wife has. I mean, this is like, what are we talking about? He's not a Kohen, he's a Levite. So, I mean, she can...
We go back to the Yerushalmi. Let's start with the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, "Ein nosim grushaso shel melech." You're not allowed to divorce a woman who was married to the melech, even though she was divorced from the melech. So the Baal HaTurim says that there's a hint to that halacha in the Torah itself. It's not just pure Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's partially Torah Shebaksav, because the Torah calls it Eishes Moshe. That Tzipora, even after she luchel, she got a get, she's still called Eishes Moshe. What message is the Torah trying to transmit here? There's a halachic message here. And that halachic message is that no one else is allowed to marry.
So I'd be interested if there's any other commentary after the Bar Tzinora, or even prior to that, further, qualifies what we just heard, because I'm kind of surprised.
Okay,
nobody would go
that's
than
fair.
That.
I mean,
I'm not going to be the be all and the end all.
I'm just trying to work out what our goal for today is, to try to compare this comment in the Mechilta that Achar Shiluchel means that Moshe divorced Tzipora, and according to the Baal HaTurim, that means that no one else could divorce her because Moshe Rabbeinu had the status of a king. How do we reconcile that statement with a Tanchuma? So let's read the Tanchuma and see why we're very perplexed.
Okay.
The Tanchuma says the following: V'chein Moshe l'fisha osak b'Torah nase rosh u'melech shenemar vayhi bishurin melech uminayin sheyoga b'Torah. So again, according to the Tanchuma, what elevated Moshe such that we would now appoint him as the king, and he gains the status of the king? Esek HaTorah. That itself is an interesting idea, that Esek HaTorah, dedicating yourself to the Torah study, makes you an appropriate candidate to be a melech. But what we're more interested in is the next part. The Tanchuma asks, Uminayin, how do I know sheyoga b'Torah? Where do we see Moshe Rabbeinu's self-sacrifice? You know, he's killing himself for the sake of the Torah. Shenemar vahisham im Hashem arba'im yom v'arba'im laila. Moshe goes up to the mountain for 40 days, 40 nights. And that's going to be the what we call the Kabbalah HaTorah. Hashem for 40 days, 40 nights is going to transmit the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is in a state in which he's totally dedicated, Yomam V'layla, 24-7 to study Torah. He doesn't eat, he doesn't sleep, he doesn't drink. Again, there's something obviously metaphysical going on over here, supernatural, but be that as it may, the Mechilta understands that Moshe Rabbeinu is killing himself to receive the Torah. That's called Yigia B'Torah. And as a result of Yigia B'Torah, he becomes a melech. So if I would ask you the following question, based on this Tanchuma, what would be your answer? I need a yes or no answer. Was Moshe Rabbeinu a melech before he received the Torah? No. Why? Because the Mechilta is assuming that the reason why he was worthy and he merited becoming a king is because he was Yogei HaVetorah. And that was during the 40 days and 40 nights of Matan Torah. Hmm. Now, what that means is that at the moment of Matan Torah itself, he was not yet a melech. After Matan Torah, when he proved himself, and so to speak, and elevated himself through the study of Eisek HaTorah B'Yigia for 40 days for the nights, then afterwards he became a melech. Now, let's go back to Yisro. Right? Yisro shows up at what point? It says, Li'achar Shiluchel. Now, the question is, at that moment, was Moshe Rabbeinu a melech? Well, let's ask the following question. When did Yisro come? Let's assume, for argument's sake, that Yisro came before Matan Torah. So at that moment in time, in Parshas Yisro, was Moshe Rabbeinu a melech? No, he wasn't a melech yet, because according to the Mechilta, he only became a melech after Matan Torah. Then we could say that even according to that one opinion, this is a machlokas to Amoraim in Zvachim Daf Kuf Tezayin, that Yisro came li'achar Matan Torah. So then was Moshe Rabbeinu a melech? So we could say the following based on the Mechilta, that if we assume that Yisro came after Matan Torah, then he came after the 40-day period in which Moshe Rabbeinu was Yogei HaVetorah, and immediately Moshe Rabbeinu was uplifted, he was upgraded to the status of a melech. So then it works out very well that when we get to the pasuk of Tzipora Eishes Moshe Achar Shiluchel, we're talking about a woman who was married to the king, and he became a king after Matan Torah. Yisro comes after Matan Torah, and this pasuk indicates that she could never marry anyone else. And that's what the Baal HaTurim says, that Achar Shiluchel, she's still considered Eishes Moshe. Why? Because she's married to the king. Well, what do you mean she's married to the king? This is before Matan Torah. The answer is this is after Matan Torah. Why? Because we have one opinion that maintains that Yisro ba li'achar Matan Torah. There's another opinion there in the Gemara in Zvachim that Yisro shows up before Matan Torah. Is Akati lo hoya Moshe Torah's Melech? He doesn't have the status of a Melech because he didn't get to the point of Yigia for 40 days, 40 nights in Torah. V'yoda afilu l'man diyomer she Yisro ba li'achar Matan Torah. V'kol makom, nevertheless Moshe giresh tzipor kodem Matan Torah. So if we can prove that at the moment of Shiluchel of Gerishin, Moshe Rabbeinu was not yet appointed as a melech, is Pashut Adin She'ein Nosin Eishes HaMelech Tolui Rakim Hoya Melech B'Shosh Gersha. If he becomes a melech and he's appointed such after he divorces his wife, she's not an Eishes Melech. She's only an Eishes Melech if he was appointed as a king before the Gerushin, while they were able to maintain the marriage. Now she's married to the Melech. So now we have to ask the following question. How could the Baal HaTurim claim that even after Moshe divorces his wife, Tzipora, she's still Asura because she's an Eishes Melech, if Moshe Rabbeinu had not yet at that point, when he divorced his wife Tzipora, he wasn't yet a melech. He didn't have that status of a melech. Unless we assume that Moshe Rabbeinu does not need Matan Torah and the schus of Yigia B'Torah in order to be appointed as a melech. He has many other merits, even before he dedicates himself Yom V'Lailah for 40 days, 40 nights to the study of Torah. And based on those merits, he gets upgraded to the status of a melech. It's against what? It's against the Mechilta. Is everybody following? The Mechilta says that why and when was Moshe Rabbeinu appointed as a melech? Because he gave the Torah, and after he gave the Torah at Har Sinai, then and only then did he get upgraded to the status of a melech. Well, if that be the case, then we don't understand the Baal HaTurim, because the Baal HaTurim is saying that already at the time of the Gerushin, which is before Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of the Melech. How can he possibly have the status of the Melech if we accept the premise of the Mechilta? The premise of the Mechilta is that he can only become a Melech after Matan Torah, through Yigiyah B'Torah.
Who's appointing him as Melech? I mean, and the Melechs were appointed by prophets. He was the number one prophet. Who can appoint him? Besides, that comes much later anyway with Shaul. So
The pasuk says by he b'shurin Melech. That's a pasuk, I think, in Zol Sabroch. Am I right? And that pasuk, says Chazal, is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayhi Bishurin Melech, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Melech.
Is this Doraisa, or where's it coming?
And that's a Doraisa, right? Wow. Obviously, it's a Doraisa. And there are many, many proofs that Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of a Melech. The only issue is, how and when did he become a Melech? In his long career, when did he become a Melech? And what the Gevuras Yitzchak is presenting is a machlokas between the Balaturim, based on the Mechilta, and the Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma says that how and when does Moshe Rabbeinu get the status of a Melech? That's through Matan Torah. That's called Yigiyah B'Torah Arboim Yom Arboim Laila. That cannot be accepted by the Mechilta, the way that we explain the Mechilta, meaning the Mechilta is saying that no one could marry Moshe Rabbeinu's wife after Moshe Rabbeinu delivers the get, because she has the status of Eishes Melech. How could she have the status of Eishes Melech when Moshe Rabbeinu delivers a get before Matan Torah? According to the assumption of the Tanchuma, Moshe Rabbeinu can only be appointed as a Melech after Matan Torah. Mm-hmm. It must be that there's a machlokas here about when and how, if you will, Moshe Rabbeinu becomes a Melech. According to Tanchuma, when does he become a Melech? After Matan Torah. And why does he become a Melech? In the Zchus of Yigiyah B'Torah. According to the Mechilta, the way the Baal HaTurim is explaining the Mechilta, Moshe Rabbeinu became a Melech before he divorced his wife, Tzipora, which means way before Matan Torah. And he still had the status of a Melech because the Baal HaTurim says, Acher Shiluchea, Eishes Moshe. She's still considered the wife of Moshe. No one could marry her. So it means that the moment of the get, Moshe Rabbeinu was a Melech. And that moment of the get preceded, chronologically, the Matan Torah experience. It must be that Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed, or upgraded, if you will, to the status of a Melech, even before Matan Torah. Just 1 second. Let's, if you don't mind.
Just curious, going back to Yitro. Yitro Yishmo was a Makloch, it's what he heard?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, Eze Shmua Shamu Ba. So if you hold Matan Torah, then it means that Yisro came after Matan Torah. If you hold he heard, let's say, Melchemes HaMolek, which was certainly before Matan Torah, or if you hold he heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, which was before Matan Torah, then it means that Yisro shows up on the scene before Matan Torah. But the assumption here, in this paragraph, is that the Shiluchel, the Gerushin, between Moshe and Tzipor took place before Matan Torah. If you accept that premise, then it can't be that Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed as a Melech because of Matan Torah, the Yigiyah Torah, and after Matan Torah, because already at the point of Shiluchel, she is the Eishes Melech, and no one's allowed to marry her as a result of this divorce. It must be that Moshe Rabbeinu had the status of a Melech before he divorced Tzipporah, hence before he received the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu stands on his own merits, irrelevant or independent of Torah, to be appointed as a Melech. So the Vayhi B'Shurin Melech has nothing to do, and it's not generated by Matan Torah.
So help me understand this, Rabbi. It seems like the operative phrase is, he has a status as if he were a Melech.
No, he is a Melech.
So
Moshe Rabbeinu is a Melech.
So
Vayhi B'Shurin Melech.
Help me understand this then. A Melech has the authority to take life. I mean, that's one of the definite. You see it throughout history. A Melech can take life. Moshe doesn't do that, and he gets all his instruction from Hashem. I mean, he's an instrument of Hashem, whereas the other Melechs are not prophets, right? I mean, I can understand where, if you quote, he's given the status of a Melech, but in terms of actually acting like a, being able
So again, our discussion today is about not Moshe Rabbeinu's powers as a melech, but what is the status of his wife? Is she allowed to marry someone? That's what we're focused on today.
And it's saying that she can't because he's a melech.
Correct. Now, exactly what those are the implications as far as his powers, that's a whole different discussion. Okay. That's not our subject today.
Yeah. So that's a hung up one.
You know, wait. Yeah, okay.
But I understand.
So let's just see, we don't have too much time, but he has a very interesting piece over here in the next paragraph of Hine, which concludes his presentation. And he says the following, that there are two dimensions to a melech. If you're familiar a little bit with the Briska Derech, this is what we call applying the Briska methodology. There are two dimensions of a melech. He sends you to look into his... he wrote another book, it's a commentary on Parshas Vayera. And he says, "Dibemelech ikatarti." There are two aspects of being a melech. Chada, one of them is... Ikar Torah Melech Shechal Begufa. No, it's his personal status as a melech. Vishenis, but there's another dimension of Nisius Shel Malchus, which means the Islay Torah Nasi Shehu Srora Ushlita Al Yisrael. He has the powers of the king, and he can dominate the people of Israel. And he says the following: what's the status of Moshe At the moment of Matan Torah? He says the following: Moshe lo haya melech b'shas Matan Torah. Let's say if we go according to the Tanchuma, it's only after Matan Torah Moshe Rabbeinu is going to study the Torah for 40 days, 40 nights, and afterwards he's going to get appointed. He says mikol makom, it could very well be that even the Mechilta would agree that haya le Moshe Hanesius Shel Malchus Kvar B'Mitzrayim. Again, we'll have to research exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu's status was back in Mitzrayim, but it seems to indicate from different statements in Chazal that already in Mitzrayim he had a certain dominating status over Klal Yisrael. So he had what we call Nesius Shel Malchus. He wasn't yet a Melech, but he had the Nesius. If we're going to say Shadin Sheinosim Grushas Mel Toli B'Nesius Shel Malchus, now we can reconcile the Balaturim based on the Mechilta with the Tanchuma. The Balaturim is right and the Tanchuma is right. They're talking about two different dimensions of Malchus. The Balaturim is saying that even before Matan Torah, even back in Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu already had the Nesius Shel Malchus.
Should be Nesius means what?
Nesius means the powers of a Melech. He can dominate over the people. He can tell them exactly how they have to behave and what they're allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do. He can give them commands. So that ability of the Melech to command, that's called Nesius Shel Malchus. Okay. He's like a Nasi that he holds, you know, he's lords it over them, as we would say. He hasn't yet been appointed as a king, what we call Malchus Begufo yet. And now we could say the following, that when the Balaturim says that you can't marry the divorced woman of a king, because Moshe Rabbeinu was already a king, that's because the Balaturim understood that even before the formal appointment of Moshe Rabbeinu as a king, which according to the Tanchuma, and nobody's arguing against the Tanchuma, would only take place after Matan Torah, but nevertheless, even before Matan Torah, going back to Mitzrayim, he had the status of Nesius Shel Malchus. And the difference is that the Isur, according to the Balaturim, of not marrying the Grusha of a Melech is generated not by the formal appointment of the Melech Begufo, which he calls a Chalos Din Melech Begufo, but rather it's generated by the Nesius Shel Malchus. And once Moshe Rabbeinu, going back to the time of Mitzrayim, already had that status of Nesius Shel Malchus, although he wasn't yet a Melech Begufo, then no one could marry his divorced wife because she is considered included in the Iser of Nesias Grushas HaMelech. So what's exciting about this is that it really opens up a whole research project, and that is, what's the difference between Nisius Shel Malchus and Amelech Begufo? And we're going to see that certain dinim will only apply to Amelech Begufo, other dinim will apply once there's Nisius Shel Malchus, even before the Amelech Begufo. Wow. And now we're suggesting, based on the Balaturim, that Tzipora Eishes Moshe Achash Shiluchev could not get married to any other man because she was Eishes Melech. That's because of the Nisius Shel Malchus, which was already engendered way back at the time of Mitzrayim, even though the formal, what we call Melech Begufo, that Chal Hashem, that halachic status would only be engendered after Matan Torah. Okay, then we'll stop here. And again, I appreciate everyone joining me. And the next year will be next Monday, be Ezra Hashem at 10 at 10:30.
When was the when did he give her allegedly this gift? It was in Mitzrayim, wasn't it? When they separated, they didn't.
I think it was on the way from Midian to Mitzrayim. But Mitch, you might remember.
Midian to Mitzrayim.
Yeah, no.
There was something that went after the whole bit with the
dress, yeah.
And then when he goes to meet Aaron, that he was by himself at that point.
Right.
So at that point.
But he's separated from her, having relationship with her.
He's in Midian, and he's on his way to Mitzrayim. He's in that period of time, all of which takes place before Matan Torah.
Right. He was going back. I'm saying, but
I don't know. So that's what Mary said.
Now, if the Rambam says the
following,
it's a totally different season. Masha Kosev, he knows
this forever. Mitzrayim.
Kvar Hanesius Shel Malchus.
When did she go to Mitzrayim?
Bishosh Yirsha. Now, when they're in the Easter, Lisa, Kusha, Smell,
Smell,
Kol Shehlo.
Yeah, I don't know if the poor ever went to
Mitzrayim. Hanesius Shel Malchus. Leka, Easter, Lisa, Kusha.
She lived in Mitzrayim.
Valkoch, the Spila, Valtur, Kvar, Lamosh, and Torah, Smell, Kodima.
And he stayed there for 40 years.
Shom, Gamber, Amban, Bab Suki.
He lived there for 40 years. He was staying over many places there. I don't think she ever knew
she
the Yisro book Hodev.
That was on the way. So I don't think they ever came to Mitzrayim. I don't think the boys ever came to Mitzrayim.
That Yisro came before Matan, and yet the Ramban insists that he had the status of Torah Melech. And that would mean that he had a Torah Melech Begufo before Matan Torah. And he was a Melech al Yisrael, even though it was before Matan Torah. So it means that the appointment of Moshe Rabbeinu as the Melech is not dependent upon Matan Torah. And then we really have a locus here between the Balaturim on the one hand and
the Mitzrayim on the other. And I don't think the boys ever went to Mitzrayim.
This whole idea of the separation of the seers can only be with Moshe, because after... Because all the other kings were only became kings when they had the official process that was carried out.
So they didn't have any nisius or quasi status of the Melech until they were appointed as
such. She didn't come with him to Mitzrayim. I don't think so. I don't think she ever did. I don't think the boys ever did.
Is the intention of Torah, is it because she had a special kedusha, or is the intention maybe ended that the Melech should be able to remarry her?
I don't know, but Moshe was an obstacle. But Moshe,
that's an interesting question.
You're saying that
since Moshe was shoslach, Shanisa is prohibited. If she gets married, that closes the door on his ability to remarry. I always thought it was a din kavod malchus. You know, who are you to marry the wife of the king? But you're adding another dimension that maybe it closes the door on the possibility of developing remarry.
After she does the circumcision,
because isn't Moshe Moshe indeed remarries by himself?
I think that's what Mish was saying before.
If they had kids in Midian, she would
have been in the desert.
She wasn't in the desert in Midian.
Is that correct?
Right. We're going according to the filter that she would have been scared of Shem. So that's something that you could research. Ask Mish from the Bar Makomos whether or not he remarried. We married.
Right. First of all,